God, okay. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our tax roundtable. It is now May of 2020. Amazing that we've gone this far. We've got a very friendly, healthy crowd here today. And one of the things that we do in the roundtable is we try to have everybody introduce themselves if their microphone is working. So it's going to take longer today because we've got more people. If your microphone isn't working and you know it's not working, do me a favor and write your introduction, and I will be your voice. Okay? So then wait until it gets to be your turn because we're doing it in alphabetical order, and then I will be your voice. Because if you put it in and everyone else is typing and making notes and stuff, then I'll miss it. And if you have a microphone, you'll get to do your own introduction. And the way I want you to do your introduction is as follows. Hi, my name is your name. In this case, it's Eva Rosenberg. I am here in sunny Southern California, and I'm here to learn as much as I can from you. When you introduce yourself, tell me your name, where you are, why you're here, and if you're going to have a question. If you're going to have a question, I'm going to make a note and come back to you after we deal with the questions that people sent in advance. Okay, so we're always going to start with the questions that people sent in, and then we're going to go to everybody else's questions. And the purpose of these roundtables is very similar to what we do in our breakfast meetings here in the San Fernando Valley when we were meeting in person, is it's an open forum. Anybody who has issues you want to bring up, client issues, practice issues, your own tax return issues, anything you want to bring up, you are welcome to bring up. This is the place to ask the client question, unlike in the class where, we're focusing on the exam. So there really is no limitation, but just don't hog the session because other people may have issues that you want that they want to bring up. And we fundamentally have about an hour. We'll go longer if people have more issues. So I haven't booked anything immediately afterwards. Okay, so let's start. We're going to take people. You see the attendance list over on the left. We're going to take people in alphabetical order. If your microphone is working and you get it to work, once you get it to work, don't turn it off. I will unmute you. Okay? So that way, if I need to come back to you, you don't need to reconfigure everything. All right. Now I'm going to start with Akiko. Look for the microphone icon on the top of your screen, the top left side of your screen, and if it's not green after I unmute you, click on it to make it green. Okay, Aikiko, and if you don't have a microphone, do me a favor. There's a little man over there on top with his hand up. Click on that and mark yourself step away so that I don't call on you. Okay, so if you do that, then I won't waste everyone's time trying to call on you. Because then we'll only focus on people who may also actually have a microphone. So, Akiko, let me try you. Akiko, let's hear your. That's interesting. How come Imam has. Okay, that's better. Okay, Akiko, do you have a microphone working? Okay, I'm not going to spend a lot of time waiting. All right. Okay, in the meantime, Judy says, my name is Judy Charbonneau Steele. I'm in Ventura County. I'm very excited to be in the class and learn as much as possible. I am new and very grateful for this opportunity. Awesome. Okay, Anne, I don't know if your microphone's working, but we'll try just in case. It's not. All right. So I will wait for Anne to type her introduction. Anne is our secret weapon, by the way. Bernice, hi there. So Bernice, we got your mic to work before, so
Hi,
hi.
yeah. Well, is this a good loud level?
It is
Good
perfect.
loudness? Okay. Hi, my name's Bernice Brightbill. I live in Pasadena, California. I've been working through the EA classes now, seems like forever, 3 years. Still have part two to get through and pass the other two on my first try. So hopefully that'll happen whenever I can get finally to it. I'm here to find out the best way to help a new client, a US citizen, a professor who's been teaching in Indonesia for, since 2016 and hasn't filed any taxes.
Great,
So
and we've got
we'll
that.
talk later. Cool. Cool. Thanks.
Excellent. Thank you for
So
sending
glad
that to
to.
me in advance. I appreciate that. Yeah, and Bernice has been working on this through a lot of other adversity, and she did finally start taking the exams last year, and so now she's going to finish this year. So once she started, it's like gangbusters. Okay, Brandon. Hey, Brandon. Meanwhile, Anne is Anne McIntyre, San Diego. She is a CPA and an EA and a former IRS auditor. Brandon, we got you working before. All right, so guys, I'm going to not spend a lot of time waiting because we've got people here. Camille, just type your intro. Camille, we got you working before. So I know it takes a moment, Camille. So if we got you set up before, don't turn it off. We're losing Camille. All right, Celine. Hi, Celine. Thank you, Akiko. I appreciate it. Just remember, all of you in the class who want to participate Saturday, make sure that you talk to Adobe Connect to get your microphone set up. Celine, we had you before. Okay. Let's try Camille. She's got herself muted. Don't mute yourself, please, because nobody's going to hear you until I unmute you. Okay, Camille.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay. Perfect. I apologize. Hi,
It's
I am
okay.
Camille Mitchell. I live in Atlanta, Georgia, born and raised. I did not have a question, but initially, but now I think I do. So I have a tax client who initially told me he was single, but it turns out that he is married, not legally separated, they just moved out from one
Okay,
another.
Camille,
Yeah.
I wrote down that you have a question. That's all I
Oh,
want to know. Okay, I wrote
okay. My
down that you have a
apologies.
question, and then I'm going to come back to you, so
Oh,
don't turn your mic off or mute yourself, and then we're
gotcha.
going to go through it.
My
Okay?
apologies. Okay, perfect. Thank
No,
you.
perfect. It's a learning curve. All right. Okay, Christina, we got you working, right? Did we get you working? Hi. All right. Oh, no. Okay, Christina, hi. My name is Christina Weddle, originally from the Bay Area, California. I retired to Mountain Home, Idaho. About 3 years ago, I took one class from H&R Block, and then they hired me, and I've been hooked ever since, and I have a question. So I've got Christina down. We got to visit Idaho a couple of years ago. I really liked it. There's some neat stuff in Idaho. Christopher, were you able to get your microphone working? We drove through there on the way back up to Montana, and there's a really neat bear park near Idaho Falls. Christopher, definitely worth visiting. Okay, Christopher, we're not going to get that to work. Colin, how about you? Remember, if you don't have a microphone that will work or you don't want to try the microphone, look at the little man up above and set your status as away. Okay, so you don't waste everyone's time. Christopher Jackson from a surprisingly damp Fort Worth, Texas. I've prepared returns, taught other tax preparers, and helped write tax software, but I have no experience outside of individual taxes. This is my first session, so today I'm probably just going to listen. Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Debbie, does your microphone work? Great to see you. Okay, hi, Debbie Clem here. Bought my third mic, can't get it to work. I will mark myself away. Okay. Donna. Hi, Donna. It's great to see old friends here. I mean, not old guys, nothing personal. Just long-term young people, right? Okay, Donna, I'm not hearing anything. Imam, we got you to work before. Let's see if it works now. So we got your microphone to work before. Remember, don't turn it off. We won't hear you. It'll still stay private. It's not like, the government listening in on people. Okay, I'm not hearing anything. Jim, James Fretz. Hi. Okay. Imam, my name is Imam Ibrahim. I am in New York and I'm here to learn as much as possible as this is my first time to attend the roundtable, my second year with Tax Mama. Very welcome. James Fretz, back in the USA, not without trials and tribulations. You're back. You were in the Ukraine last time. Okay. Huh. All right. Debbie, question for later. Got it. Marking it down. Okay. Yeah, literally, last time he was calling in from the Ukraine. That was neat. Jason, does your microphone work? Donna, I don't know why the mic isn't working. Student from 2000 and a
Isn't
lot,
working now.
2012. I can't
Testing.
get enough of
Can
your
you hear
voice.
me?
Yes, it is, Jason. We
Oh,
can.
that's awful noises.
Introduce yourself. Oh, thank you. He's calling me awful noises. You're sounding great.
I don't think it's working.
It's working. It's working. Whoops, Jason, I typed so slowly. Yes, it's working. Introduce yourself. Oh, he just muted himself. All right. One of the things that happens sometimes is if you have your microphone set up a certain way, when you turn it on and we can hear you, you can't hear us anymore. It, on the settings on the audio, there's a little button, little box. If you push that button or unclick the check mark in that box, you'll be able to hear and speak at the same time. Julio, were we able to hear you before? I don't think so. Okay. Oh, thank you, Debbie. Celine, my name is Celine Dion, Duong. Celine Duong. I'm in San Diego. I find tax very interesting, and that's why I am here. I'm very excited with any class with Miss Eva, and I have a question. Celine. Okay. And Julio, my name, am I pronouncing it correctly or is it Julio? My name is Julio Bueno Buenano, and I'm in Broward County, Hollywood, Florida. I'm so happy and blessed to be in your class. You are very welcome. I want to learn how to take the test. I already failed it once. I'm an H&R Block advisor. No questions so far. Jason, I'm going to say not working. My name is Jason, and about to rain in Indiana, studying for the EA with Eva, here to learn as much as possible. Jason, your microphone actually was working. You just couldn't hear us. Okay, Karen, shall we try you? Karen, if you don't have a working microphone, please mark yourself
Hi,
away so
Eva.
we don't waste everyone's time. Hi,
Eva.
hey, great.
Hi. Hi. I've actually changed my name. It's Karen Sepetelli now, and I'm here in sunny Massachusetts. I took your class last year, passed all three parts, and I'm here just to catch up, and I don't have any questions for today.
Well, welcome. It
Thank
is so great
you.
to see you. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we've got some good friends here. Okay, Kimberly, I really hope your microphone works. I know you have a lot to say. Let's see if that works. Hey, Kimberly. So remember, folks, if your microphone, if you know your microphone isn't working or you don't have it plugged in, mark yourself away. Okay, I'm going to make that go away. So go ahead and So go ahead and type your introduction. George, how about you? George Lamboy, is your microphone working? Okay, no. All right. Larry, I think you said your microphone wasn't going to work, but I'll try you anyway just in case. No? Okay. We're not going to spend a lot of time, guys. Larawen, is your microphone working? Okay, if not, just type your intros and I will be your voice. Linda, we know yours works. Hi there. Yeah, we got
Okay,
it working
do you hear me?
before. Hi.
Excellent.
My name is Linda Gober, and I'm from Lawrenceville, Georgia, which is north of Atlanta. I'm here because it's been 20 plus years since I did taxes, and I need to start add that to my practice. And you already have a question for me.
And I already do. Perfect. Thank you. Okay, Larowyn. Larowyn Wilson in Inglewood, California. I have no prior tax experience. I will retire in a few years. Becoming an EA is part of my post-retirement plan. I'm here to learn as much as I can. No questions. How perfect. Look at how many people are in Southern California. Kimberly. Hi, I'm Kimberly Rollins from sunny Ormond Beach, Florida. I am brand new here and so excited to be here. Looking forward to learning and passing the exams. No questions today. Excellent. And a lot of you are her friends or part of her study buddy team. George Lamboy is in Brooklyn, New York, working on taking the EA exam. Luis, how about you? I'm going to unmute you, Luis. So, if you've got a microphone handy, let's do it. If not, we're going to pass by. All right, type your intro. Marguency, did we get it to work? Okay, no. I am Marguency Marius. I'm in Melbourne, Florida, another Melbourne. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm here to learn as much as possible about taxes to gain confidence. I'm very excited to be taking your class. I'm learning a ton. Thank you. And having those children around and at home these days is a real career. Marley. Hi, Marley. Does your microphone work? Okay, yeah, I believe that. I think anybody who can raise kids is a saint. I just don't have the courage. I would ruin them utterly. Patrick, let's try you.
Good morning.
Good
My
morning.
name is Patrick Oden. I'm in Chapala, Mexico. So I'm about a 30-hour drive southwest of Los Angeles. And I've been in tax practice for 10 years, but I still learn every time I come to a round table. And I don't have any questions today.
Great, thank you. Usually he's got great questions, and you might actually be able to help out with Bernice's questions. So I may turn to you for that because I am not the biggest genius when it comes to the non-resident spouses. I was trying to look that up yesterday and kept getting interrupted. Roper, I don't remember your first name, but I'm going to unmute your microphone. Luis, meanwhile, is from upstate New York. He's got a tax practice with his wife, and he's looking forward to getting his EA and learn from everyone here. Got a question. Okay. Luis, I will come back to you. In the meantime, Roper. Okay. Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Great. My name is Tony Glavinick. I am in a slightly hazy Mexico City. I work in nonprofit operations, but I used to do VITA programs in Chicago and San Francisco. And I've passed the first two parts of the exam, and I'm planning to pass the third part this year.
Which is the one that
Part
you
three.
need? Oh, good. That's easy. Okay. And that barely changed. So you're in good shape. Okay. This is the year to do it before they update the Circular 230, maybe someday. Okay. Jeffrey Roper from Illinois, first year EA student in the Tax Mama course. Do not have a question, simply want to listen. All right, guys, thank you so much. It is wonderful to see all of you here. Before we get into the questions, we have a couple of questions, and I've tried to answer them. If you send them to me in advance, I have time to research usually, except the one piece of Bernice's question that maybe Patrick or Tony might know the answer to, maybe Anne. Usually those those non-resident spouse questions, if you bring them into the Tax Mama website, Jean Mammon answers those because she literally wrote the book on those specific types of tax returns. So I do my best, and I really did try to look that up today, but I kept getting interrupted because every time I see questions pop up in the board or on the Tax Mama site, I try to answer them, and so I get distracted from other things I'm doing. I just wanted to give you the link to the IRS operations update. Keep an eye on this URL. This is a very important URL. The IRS puts information here about what is going on, and they updated this on the 11th, so you can see that. That's the only reason I put that top part on there. And they're talking about the paper returns. They're still not anywhere on those. Ordering forms, you can't order forms right now until further notice. Everything is available for download, so you can download the PDF file and print them as much as you need. The web options, IRS is pushing for everyone as much as possible to use the tools that they provided on the web. And the useful thing about the web options is the get transcript, look up my account, where's my refund, all of those different things that your clients have access to work perfectly well for probably 90% of taxpayers who have been filing regularly, know their adjusted gross income, and don't have their credit accounts frozen. It doesn't work for people who are non-filers because they don't have their most current information. Their address may be wrong, and people with no credit. You know, so people who have really bad credit and who don't have regular dedicated cell phone accounts, it won't work for them. But really, the IRS has done an amazing job making that tool, all of their online tools, functional for most taxpayers. When it comes to tax professionals, e-services is functioning. So if you were set up to use e-services before, all of that's still good. Unfortunately, if you weren't set up, there's no one to call anymore. Their e-services phone number used to be answered fairly quickly, and we used to get really wonderful service from them. I had the guy spend an hour with me going through the website once, long time ago. The only problem with the professional version of e-services is your password needs to be updated every 3 months, and if you're not regularly logging in, you won't update it in time. So when it comes to compliance, they are doing their best to work with people who already have cases open and already have someone assigned. All of those people who have cases open and have either a collections officer or an audit examiner or an appeals officer or IRS counsel, specific people are able to be reached at their phone numbers or their direct email addresses. Don't send any secure information without having it encrypted or something like that, but you can still reach those people. I am hearing from tax professionals that they are getting their cases resolved, and sometimes a little bit more quickly than in the past, actually. So that's pretty good news. The Taxpayer Advocate Service stays open. They're receiving phone calls at the local phone numbers, so you have to look up the local Taxpayer Advocate Office and call that number, not the national number. So there's obviously no walk-in services, and all of that's not working. People who are trying to set up tax-exempt organizations, interestingly enough, the IRS always finds that to be important in times of emergency. So that office is functioning, and they are still working on processing applications and processing the 990 reporting forms that have been sent in. So that is still going on. The telephone options, a lot of those are not necessarily working, but last week Dave Stone said that ACS, the automated collection system, is working, and they don't publish a phone number for ACS. So what the trick that I use is I sign up for Call NQ, CALLEN, the letter Q, Call NQ for that service, and Andrew has these phone lines that keep calling into the IRS all the time. And so the double benefit of the Call NQ service is you don't sit on hold with the IRS forever. You can get through in 5 minutes or less. And it has the phone number. Using his Call NQ phone number in the system, you can get to ACS directly and quickly. And ACS is something you guys can use if you're not tax professionals to look up your own accounts and things like that. ACS, Call NQ also works. It works with about 10 or 12 phone numbers. It also works with the Practitioner Priority Service, which is now open. In order to use a Practitioner Priority Service, you have to be a practitioner. You have to be an EA, CPA, or attorney, or have a valid power of attorney from your clients. However, if you have an 8821, which is an information authorization document, it's not a power of attorney, but you can fax it in to the PPS, to the Practitioner Priority Service, otherwise known as the hotline, and they can supply transcripts. They will not email them to you anymore. They will put them into your e-services account, or they will arrange to send them by mail, but I don't think they can arrange to send it by mail anymore. They used to email things to people. I mean, they used to fax things to people. They don't anymore. Taxpayer correspondence, IRS is receiving and storing mail. Processing functions has been scaled back. I'm just imagining that mountain of mail that they've received turning to mush and to paper mache, so I don't know about that. Don't mail correspondence into the IRS right now if you have anything that has a deadline. All deadlines have been pushed back to July 15th, regardless of whatever it said in the original correspondence. So it's May now. See if you can wait a month or so for the IRS to start going through their paper pile before you send anything to add to it. Wait until, they've got people back in the facilities. IRS has started to open some of the facilities in states where the governors have opened, businesses again. They aren't doing it in states where they're not open yet. So, trying to get paper into the IRS, not a great idea right now. Anything you can do electronically, so much better. The Taxpayer Protection Program, IRS, says that if anyone received letters asking for identity verification because they had a refundable credit or head of household filing status, they do have an online tool, an identity verification service, where they can click and respond to the information to free up their refunds sooner. They just updated. Notice they just updated on May 11th, so they just made this online tool available this week. So if you have clients, tell them not to ignore those IRS letters. Tell them to make sure they tell you about it and point them to this link. It's very important. And let's go to the question that Linda asked. I'm going to go through your question and then I'll unmute you as we go along, okay? So, Linda, make sure your microphone is unmuted. We've got several pages for her question. So, the taxpayer is divorced on 4/13/2018. All right. The taxpayer receives alimony and reports it. So, that was before 19. So, the alimony is income. She receives child support, which her ex-husband is keeping current. It is not taxable. She filed single for 2019, did not claim the children, but will in 2020. So they're alternating. They are alternating as taking the kids. Did not claim head of household. She should have claimed head of household, Linda, by the way, if the children were living with her. I would have claimed head of household. That wasn't a question you asked. During the marriage, they purchased three houses with 10 acres for $150,000. During the marriage, they sold one of the houses, and that sale was on their joint return, not an issue except for the basis. I'm waiting on that return to see what basis they used for the sale. That's good. In the divorce, the taxpayer got the two houses and spouse got the land. And Linda, my question to you about that specific thing is, were any of the houses that your client got, were any of them her personal residence? Taxpayer received rental income and ex had expenses for the properties which were on the tax return. So are you saying they were both rental properties, those other two houses? After the ex-spouse sells his land, and that would have been reported on his churn, I'm waiting to see what basis he used for the sale. In February 2020, my client sells the two houses for $99,000. So she has three questions. We will take them one at a time. Linda, I am going to find you and unmute you. Linda, here we go. Okay, enabling microphone.
Okay, can you hear me?
We can, so go ahead.
Okay. So on your first question, she had said she didn't claim head of household because she didn't want to. I didn't even go there with her.
Okay.
And the kids are at the father's house more, so I think that's kind of
Okay.
might be her confusion. I don't know.
Oh, no, that's fine then. If they're at the father's house more, then you're right. She's not have a head of household. Usually it's not that way. So it's good.
Perfect. Okay. And the houses were both rentals. They never lived in them. She has another property that she gets rental income that she still has that was their original home. So
So where's she living?
she has her own little house somewhere else that she
Okay, so
lives
then there were four properties that she essentially ended up with. Okay, good.
in. Yes. Well, three, the two houses and the two rental houses, and then the house that they lived in before.
And where she's living now.
Well, that was after divorce. She got that
Okay.
after they divorced.
All right.
She
Okay,
just
so.
rents that house. She just rents that house. So
Okay, cool.
I don't
Just
know.
so I understand. All right, good. Go ahead.
Okay. That's all. That's all the questions you had, right?
Right. Okay, so let's look at yours. So the first question is how do we calculate the basis? So hopefully, somewhere along the way in the beginning, they had a purchase contract with all of the information. And probably, like most purchasers who have to pay for an appraisal when they get the loan, the appraiser doesn't break out the value of the land and the buildings, which always makes me totally crazy. We're paying for the stupid appraisal. So, for future reference, anytime you have somebody buying property, hit the appraiser over the head and get them to define the value of land and buildings separately for every major structure on the property. Just pet peeve, okay? And that applies to everybody, guys. So, here what we have is we have what were they doing with the land, by the way, with those 10 acres?
It was just
Any?
with the houses, and I don't know what they had planned on doing originally, but they didn't do any of it. So it was
Okay, they
just
didn't do
vacant
anything.
land.
Okay. All right. So, and they were sold completely separately from all of the houses. So, what you have here is you have a tax return where there were three houses on the property and there was depreciation on those houses. They were all reported on the tax return.
So she had two of the houses.
But he had, but they had three originally.
Right, but they sold one while they were married.
No, I'm not asking about that. They had three originally. Were they renting all three?
Yes.
Okay, they were renting all three. They put them on a tax return with basis.
I don't know what they did. She's supposed
Find
to be
out
getting that
because that's
return
your
for me.
starting point because
Right.
that will show you the basis that they used for each of the houses. And if they did it right and they didn't include the land, now you have the basis for each of the houses, and then you subtract that from the total 150,000, and then we can allocate the size of the land that went with each house versus the total property, and that would be the basis for the land for each of the houses. That would be the ideal way to do that.
Correct. Correct.
However, we
However,
don't know. Okay. However, what we have is reality. He's filed a tax return. Okay. So
on the return, yeah, on the
okay.
return
So my
I have.
starting point is the tax returns that have already been filed.
Right.
So
And I
look at
don't
the two
have the
that she
ones when they were
has.
married. I don't have those yet. I've asked for them,
You're
but I don't
gonna
have
get those. They seem to be cooperating. You're gonna get
We'll
those.
see. We'll see.
Okay. Yeah, so
The
get those.
one,
See if you can do that.
yeah, the 2019 return that they filed last year, that she filed last year, excuse me, the two properties, one of them shows a basis of 150,000 and one of them shows a basis of 153,000, which just isn't right. Which
Whoa!
just isn't
And neither of them
right.
bought them all for 150,000.
Right, exactly. So that's my first issue, which I just noticed when you asked, when I read what you wrote, I was like, oh, I should look at that. And it doesn't say on the return which property is which. So I didn't do the return. This is coming to me. So,
Is great. Okay, they're going to hate you. All right,
yeah.
that's good. So you're going to look at the original. You still have to look at the
Yes.
original purchase
Yes, which I can
documents,
do. That
okay?
answers my question right there. And if I can look at that, hopefully that was done properly. And then
Yeah,
if
so
that's the case,
and
I can take that basis divided amongst the four different things. Okay, that helps.
okay, then what you're going to do for it was sold. Are you working on the year that it was sold? She sold it this year in 2020, right?
Correct.
If
And
I'm
she
not
called me,
mistaken.
she
Okay.
said, so I just sold a piece of property for $99,000. Do I have to pay taxes on this? And I'm like,
Yes.
yeah. And then it got into the whole other stuff. So she's
Okay, so
calling
what
me
you
to find out what she should do for this year.
which is good. Okay, so now what you're going to do is you're going to recalculate everything. They've only owned it for a little while, so it's not like a huge, set of recalculations, and you're going to fix all of the bases for the property she's got. We don't care about him right now. You're going to fix her bases, correct the depreciation that was taken, which may increase her income a little bit, but it'll sort itself out. You're going to attach the spreadsheet with the correct computations and deduct out the depreciation that's been taken in the past and use the correct depreciation. So that may give you a positive, an income number on depreciation in effect, or an adjustment on the Schedule E, or on the Form 4797, where you're going to report the net basis. You're going to do this correctly. Now, we had a conversation about correcting these things and using Form 3115 to make all of the adjustments and report these corrections to the IRS. The IRS has a special procedure using 3115 where you don't have to get approval from the IRS. We have a guy in our breakfast meeting who retired from the IRS, who was an IRS subject matter expert, and this was one of his subjects that he was the expert on, where people at the IRS would turn to him to do the research. And he says, don't be silly, you don't need to use 3115, just do the work, do the computation, and as long as everything is there and everything is included clearly, which you might want to do on paper, you don't need to use Form 3115 and attract more attention. So this is going to give you the actual basis of each of the properties. And if she sold the two properties for 99,000, she's not going to have a huge profit.
Right.
Most of it is going to be regular, is going to be capital gains. There's going to be a small amount of depreciation. They haven't owned the property that long, and that part is basically going to be ordinary income that's going to go to the Schedule One. So, if they're able to do that, that's the first step. So you've told me that they were both personal residents. You were thinking she has to pay capital gains, and so now you know what that revised computation's going to be. Now, if you are controlling the depreciation, which you are now, right? Instead of using the residential depreciation tables, instead use 40-year straight line life for the depreciation. If you do that, you don't have to recapture any of the depreciation. None of it's going to be ordinary, and then all of the income that's left is going to be capital gains. Ah,
So, okay,
nice
so
little
I'm
trick.
doing, so I'm basically, since I'm recalculating everything, it doesn't matter what she put on her tax return, is what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
This is all on the 2020 return, right? Not that I'm not going
Yes.
back to 19.
No, you can amend if you want to, but why?
Right. That's what I was thinking too. I don't really
Yeah.
want to. So.
Yeah, you don't want to touch that return. You know it's messed up to begin with. Leave it alone. So Brandon wants me to repeat that. When you are selling rental property, you're only picking up the depreciation as ordinary income if you use depreciation in excess of straight line. And I know it looks like straight line when you're using those tables the IRS set up, but it's not really because it's not using 40-year life. We're going to talk about this. We have a whole class on depreciation, so we're going to go into that in more detail. But if you only use straight line depreciation, then none of the depreciation that you pick up, you don't have to pick it up at all. All you do is reduce the basis, and so the whole basis becomes capital gain. So if you think ahead for the long term and you use the 40-year life in the first place and straight line, you don't have to pick up recaptured depreciation. You just keep reducing the basis. Okay, let's look at your next question. So third, she had zero tax in 2019. Does she have to pay estimated taxes by July 15th, or can she wait until next year? Yes, she does not have to pay taxes now, but make sure she has the money to pay the taxes. So if you can, Linda, do the computations now so she has an idea of what her taxes are going to be like next year. And make sure she has the money set aside, not in an investment like in the stock market, which goes up and down right now and is really scary. She can put it into a certificate of deposit. And if she has a credit union account or something, she might be able to get more than 0.5%. She might even be able to get as much as 2 or 3% because she can afford to put it in for a year right now.
Yeah, I told her, I said, you need to put that money away. Don't touch it. At least,
Yes.
I told her at least a third of it put aside just for
Yeah,
safety's
lock it
sake.
up. Good advice. Lock it up so that she's not tempted to touch it. Otherwise, it goes quickly.
Yeah, and that was what she was saying, well, when do I need to pay it? Because I don't want to put it in for a year if I have to pay it by July. I said, well, I don't know. Let me find out. So.
Yeah, so no, you're good. Good questions. Well explained. So, yeah, she is going to be okay. She's going to be okay. And as long as she holds on to the money, she'll have a bonus next year. But you'll know, you'll have an idea once you do the computations and project what she's going to earn this year.
So I basically need to get all of the tax returns since they purchased the property. Okay, that's where she's going to have to work for me. Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Let us go to Bernice. All right, Bernice, I'm going to unmute you in just a moment. She says, I've been working on a new client's return 2017 to 2019, and I have questions concerning foreign income reporting and FinCEN and FATCA. I've never done a 2555 before, but have filed FATCA. Okay. He is a professor who's been teaching in Indonesia for the past 3 years. His income docs are a compilation of total yearly income in rupiahs, approximately 14,000 per dollar, with itemizations of housing, food allowance, etc. We'll talk about that. I have all his dates, and due to the time off between semesters, when he came back to the US, he did not get 330 days each calendar year, but according to the rules, I'd love to see those rules. It seems vacations are allowed. So, does that mean it's okay to have under 330 days? Okay, Bernice, I'm going to unmute your microphone. Let's get you back
Perfect.
on.
Yeah, so it's bona fide resident, not I think, I need to do just the one that isn't limited by 330 because each year he's here too many days
Well,
in
yeah, but
between.
he may not qualify as a bona fide resident. To be a bona fide resident, you have to be treated in the country as a resident of the country.
Oh,
It's not just I feel like calling myself a bona fide resident. Tony says, what kind of visa does he have in Indonesia? So that's going to be the other thing.
He told me
because
a
if he
work
has,
permit and resident.
If he has a work permit, that's not a permanent resident. It's not a bona fide resident. So Tony and Patrick are our experts outside the country. So that is going to be, you know, that's going to be something that I think is going to thwart your ability to use form 2555.
Okay.
And Patrick says, in his future plans, does he intend to return to the U.S. or stay there indefinitely? We already know he came back.
Yes, January 2020, and he's trying to bring his new Indonesian wife over and going through immigration to qualify himself. So he wants me to show as much income as possible.
And again, that means he's definitely defined himself as not being a bona fide resident of the country.
Oh, so bona fide residents are people who want to stay there forever, like expats.
Yeah, like that. So bona fide residents are people who are there long term, you know, follow all the rules of being a resident of that country. They become residents of the country.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So Patrick said, but let's look at intention. In 2017, was it his plan to stay there long term or was it just a short term contract? Good
I'm
questions.
Not sure. I
Ask
know
him.
It sounded. Yeah, I will. It sounded like he wanted to be there forever, but I'm not sure. I'll have to ask.
Okay, so find out about that. Find out if there's anything in writing that speaks to his intention to be there long term. If you can find that, you may get away with the bona fide resident status. If you can't, then he is not going to have, he's not going to qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion. But that's not that important, okay?
No,
considering how much he's earned, how little he's earned, it's not going to be as bad as you think.
Right. That's what I'm hoping. Because he only made between $17,000 and $19,000 each year.
Okay, so the next question is, did he pay taxes on his earnings to Indonesia?
He was given a paper bag full of rupiahs every, I don't know, week or two, millions of these things. And he has no idea what tax was taken out before he received it.
Okay, he is smart enough to be a professor. Have him ask the question.
Okay.
He's an adult. Put on his adult panties and have him find out.
Okay, I'll tell him. All
right. Yes, please. He probably didn't. Okay, they probably didn't, but ask the questions. If not, then we don't have the ability to use the foreign tax credit because that would have been an option for him, right? If he can demonstrate and get in writing that taxes were paid and that were withheld from his bag of paper, of millions of rupiahs, then we can get the foreign tax credit, but we need that. All right.
I asked him already, but he didn't have an answer for me.
Well, he knows how to reach people.
Yes, he should.
Okay, so let's take a look. All right, so he's moved back here. He had over $10,000 in his foreign bank account, which I don't know how he did if he was getting paid as little as you say. All right, you know, you got to wonder about that. And you said he sold everything. What did he sell? What did he own while he was living there?
Well, he bought furniture and things, and he had a motorcycle for transportation. And when he sold everything to move back in December of 19, he ended up with just, you know, actually in his bank account statement, I could see how many millions of rupiahs were there before he closed it out. And brought all the money here. And I don't remember exactly the amount he brought here, but the number of rupiahs translated into $15,581 in November, December of 19.
And he was earning about a net of $20,000 a year and traveling back and forth to the United States every year. I you know, the numbers don't quite work for me, dear. You don't save up that much money.
For me too. I'm thinking that maybe the amount that he's reporting as income is double what I see on the documents from the college, the university, because it says a yearly contract, and most of it is all the housing allowance, food allowance, travel allowance, supplies, blah blah blah. So I'm thinking that this is actually double this income, and half of it that I see reported is all the allowances. And I'm not trying to take income, I'm not trying to do the income exclusion, because he wants to show income, but he also
Okay.
doesn't have money to pay huge taxes. So
Well, you
I don't
can't
understand.
quite have it both ways. All right. So,
Exactly.
all
Exactly.
right. But really, unless they were paying all of his expenses, there's no way he could have amassed $15,000 for all of those things on what they were paying him.
Well,
Okay.
that they
Just
were covered.
as reality, okay?
Yeah,
So if they're
absolutely.
paying all of his expenses,
Right.
You need to kind of look at what those allowances are, and if they're part of the contract and they are paying his housing and so forth for their benefit, then you may not have to pick any of that up as income. All right?
That's what
So,
I'm trying to report.
but get
That.
but get but get the details on that to make sure. Now,
Okay.
the woman he's marrying, she is Indonesian.
Yes.
Does she have income?
I don't know anything about her other than she's pregnant.
Okay, so
So there's that.
when did they get married?
Last year.
In 2019. So for
Well,
2017 and 18, they're single?
no, you know what? Actually, he said he just married her before he left
2020.
in 2020.
Okay,
Yeah.
so for 2017, 18, and 19, he is single. So
Correct.
we're not concerned about 2020 at this time, and you are going to get her a social security number by the time you file 2020.
Yes, that's
Okay,
the
so
plan.
that's going to be cool. All right. So in the meantime, for 2018 and 19, he has a standard deduction of about $12,000. 2017, I think we're still under the old standard deduction. He's going to
Correct.
owe taxes for 2017.
Yes, it
All right.
does.
But in 2017, he may be able to deduct his travel expenses if he paid them out of pocket and they didn't pay them. But what you can look at for 2017, because he was an employee, clearly he has an employment contract. For 2017, you can look at the per diem rates for the number of nights using the State Department per diem rates. You can look at the per diem rates for lodging and meals for all of the days and the travel expenses if he paid his own airfare back and forth. And you can use Schedule A, Form 2106, for I think for 2017, and probably wipe out a lot of his taxable income unless he wants to leave that showing that he has the taxable income and pay tax. But
That's
that for two.
the issue.
But
Right.
for 2017, he may not want it, okay? Let's say you don't do that for 2018 and 19 because it's not an option.
Right. Yeah. What about Schedule C? I don't think that's possible because this isn't self-employment. But if
It's
he's paid
not.
down, no, okay. No
He's
Schedule C.
not an employee. He's not self-employed. He is an employee for, when you're self-employed, they don't pay all of your housing and all of your other expenses. He has an employment contract. Thank you, Tony. Tony just gave you the link for the per diem rates.
Ah, thank
Okay.
you, Tom. I see that. Wonderful.
Okay, so
Absolutely.
You're going to look at the allowances, make sure that those will qualify as not being taxable for those years. Now, for the income, for the wages, it's all going to be treated as W-2 wages. And so you're going to fill out, what the heck is that form number 48? What is the form number for a substitute for wages? Hang on. IRS form, it's a 48, it's a four form. Substitute for W-2, 48 what? It's 48 something. Yes, 4852. Is that going to work? Form 4852. Yes, form 4852 is going to be the substitute for wages. You're going to fill in everything as though he had wages.
Okay.
Okay. In Drake, oh, by the way, Patrick, she is using Drake, I believe. No, you're
No,
using
Oracle.
OOTL. You're using the other one. You're using
Oracle.
OLT. Okay, so use form 4852, fill in the information that relates. And in there, it asks you why you don't have a W-2 and say it's foreign wage income, and that's why you don't have the appropriate withholding and so forth.
Oh,
So
that's
you can.
why I don't fill out the FEC, which creates the 50, the 2555.
Right. So yeah, you're
Oh.
not going to do the foreign income because you're not using the form 2555. He doesn't qualify.
No wonder I've had a hell of a time trying to fill that
See, now you can take a breath and it's okay. And he
Okay.
doesn't have enough assets to deal with the FATCA form, so he's nowhere near that amount. And so, okay, bye, Camille. Thanks. So he's nowhere near that amount, and you're okay with that.
He might have, though, if his bank account reports 218 million rupiahs on a certain date in 2019, I think I should file it.
The FATCA, not the FBAR. The FBAR you need.
Oh, okay, because I've got that all filled out. But
Yeah,
isn't the FBAR
the
FATCA?
FATCA, if the FATCA deals with total assets, and I think even for a single person, it starts at 50,000. If they're out of the country, it starts at higher. I don't know that he had that much. So look at that. Patrick disagrees with me about what? So Patrick disagrees. Let's see why. If you put him in as a foreign or owner employer compensation, it will go on to the wages and it won't create a 2555. So Patrick says that you can fill in the FEC and have it go to the right place, which you might call OLT for support to see if that will work, but if it's making you crazy, use 4852.
Okay, yeah, I've already gotten them to update 17 to
Okay.
allow me to open the 2555
Okay.
into, yeah, but that's maybe something I shouldn't have done. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't need the 2555. You just need to, if you, Patrick, if you use the FEC system, because I know you're using a different software, if you're using the FEC system, is there a place to check that they don't qualify for 2555? Or do you have to put in the dates and it automatically doesn't create the 2555? It's totally separate. All right, so you may be able to
Yeah.
use that. So check with OLT to see, if you have time to talk to them. Otherwise,
Sure.
save time, save headaches, do something that works. It simply doesn't calculate Social Security. The
Yeah.
4852 might, but you can put zeros in on the boxes for Social Security income because it's not Social Security income. So you can work it around. So if the FEC works, go for it. You
Okay.
did a pretty good job with the questions. So, okay, you said he's a U.S. minister, very little income, under 2,000 from teaching in Arizona. He needs to give more information. So he's not doing any married filing separately
No.
because they weren't married through 2019. You're going to get her the Social Security in 2000. 20, and she's not going to have a problem. Now, you said how to ask this question so that you can get a quick and usable answer. Provide a little bit more details. How old is he? Is he over
Is he old?
65?
No.
Is he married or single for each of the different years? That makes a difference for each of the, calculations.
Yeah, he's
Is
single.
he an actual employee or a freelancer? And, if someone's working overseas, did they pay taxes locally? So these are the things that you might want to ask and, include when you pose a question of this nature.
Okay, well, yeah, I've asked all those things. It's just that I need to get him to figure out foreign taxes if he wants me to try to deduct it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that would be great because if he actually turns out he paid foreign taxes, you can report a higher level of income, taking into account perhaps some of the allowances, and then offset that with the foreign tax credit, but he shows higher income for immigration.
That's what he wants. He wants as high as he can. Yeah, he wants it both ways.
But
It's
the
true.
foreign tax credit would do it. But the other strategy is, did he get a job here when he came back? Not these days.
I don't think so. Yeah, he came back right into the pandemic shutdown. He
Exactly.
came back at
So
the end of January.
if he has a job potential coming in that, when things clear up, because the universities are setting up remote teaching, see if he can get a contract like that that he can then propose to immigration, that this is the income I'm going to have and I will be able to support my wife.
That would be the best
Yeah,
because,
use the future strategy.
I think all of his past reports that I have that are on, official documents from the university are actually double what I see, because what I see are all the list of allowances, not his wages. And he would kept saying, "Well, I only got like that again." So I said, "Well, where's your record of your wages?" And he says, "Well, this is all they gave me." So I have to find out for sure exactly what it was and then report that, because as it is now, and now I see why on the 2555, I can't get it out of
You can't get
reporting
it
all
to
of
work
the
because of the dates.
well, the fact that I'm trying not to report a exclusion on his income, and it's taking it all off, so I end up with negative numbers.
Yeah,
But
you
that's
don't
because
want
I
that.
filled it in wrong, I'm
Well,
sure.
that's what
So
the 2555 does, is it takes the income out.
and I don't want to do that. I just want to take his
Okay.
expenses.
But he's not qualified for 2555.
Good.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much, everybody. And I will copy these links and work on it. And thank you. I might talk with you, Patrick, later, or even Jean Mammon about
Yeah,
this, if
or
that's
yeah.
possible.
Yeah, you know
Okay.
where to find her. Okay. All right. So I know Camille had a question. She had to leave. Christina, you said you had a question. Does your microphone work? Okay. Doing a 2019 return, the client has several retirements, including an annuity. What do you do when it looks like the annuity for his 2018, 17, and 16 return have not been calculated correctly, meaning not even calculated, and I don't have all the info to complete the simplified or general calculation? He retired in May 1994 at age 63. He is now 88, and his spouse is 78. I am not good at all of that. I have been relying on the annuities. I have been relying on the information on the 1099-R itself. If he retired in 1994, which was about 25 years ago, it is likely that by now he has depleted his basis in the annuity. So the one thing you can do is find out what his basis was, and either look at the information in the IRS website about annuity computations, which you seem to know about the simplified and general computation, or talk to somebody who is an expert in retirement. Yeah, box two says unknown, but if we don't have a number that comes in the amount that gives us any kind of an adjustment, I use the same amount as box one as the taxable amount. So hopefully you're telling me that he has been paying tax on that annuity. Okay. Marla has a question. She has a client who's 82 and forgot to take his RMD in 2019, and I wanted to confirm the proper way to apply for his exemption to the 50% penalty. You know what? There is a place on the IRS website where at least the first shot, RMD penalty waiver. Hold on. By the way, The chat file will be posted in the board. And so here it is, Marley. There is a IRS has a procedure that you can get the penalty waived, certainly in the first year. Okay, now we're not going to do microphones anew this time. Okay, Debbie said she had a question. Are you still here, Debbie? Did you want to type your question? Christina, are we okay? I'm totally not an expert in annuities. Okay, good. Debbie, you had a question if you want to type it. In the meantime, Celine, excuse me, Debbie, try my mic. Okay. All right, we'll get back to Celine in a second. Debbie, your mic is on. Okay, Debbie, I'm going to let you type it because we're running out of time. Celine, Ms. Eva, would you mind being my voice? Not at all. I have three kids around right now. I have a relative who comes to the United States under an EB-5 visa investor program. They invest into real estate property. They arrived in Los Angeles September 19th last year. I advised them to file tax return, even though they had just been to the U.S. 4 months before the year end. They have one child, 10 years old, and one child, 17 years old. Their 2019 income is $36,000 from the real estate investment project they're investing in Arizona. Are they qualified for the child tax credit? No. Consider $36,000 is not earned income. Do they have social security numbers? Will they receive the refundable child tax credit? I don't think so. They still have rental houses in the country where they come from. Celine says they have social security numbers. First of all, the rental income is not earned income, so it doesn't qualify for the child tax, for the earned income credit. I don't think it qualifies for the child tax credit either because it's not earned income. They have rental houses in the country where they come from. If they're going to file a 1040, they have to report worldwide income. Otherwise, they're going to file a 1040 NR. And I don't think on a 1040 NR, as a non-resident, that they get any of our credits. So definitely, these are our Gene Mammon questions. I'm not so sure about the documentation of rental contracts. They have that in the other language. I don't know how U.S. deals with income tax outside. If they want to file U.S. tax returns, 1040, and get any of the benefits and credits, they have to report worldwide income. Doing that under a visa program, I don't know that they really can. They are, okay, they have green cards. All right, so the visa is no longer relevant. They have green cards. They're required to file U.S. tax returns. So if they have green cards and social securities, social security numbers, they might actually qualify for the child tax credit. There is no reason they wouldn't. I'm not sure. Lulu, do we need to have earned income for the child tax credit? Okay, so for the child tax credit, you don't have to have earned income. You do for the earned income credit, and they might otherwise qualify for the earned income credit on that level of earnings, but it's a short year return for 2019. So that won't be an issue. You're going to do a short year return for 2019 if they effectively set foot in the United States in September. Jason, waiver of RMD on the website. This is the Internal Revenue Bulletin and the revenue procedure. Thank you. And I gave you the link to the instructions, I hope, on the IRS website. Okay, Debbie, you had a question. Hang on. This is not the waiver. So yeah, thank you, Jason, for finding the thing about the waiver. Debbie, okay, to follow up on my B&B where the owner bought property and the S Corp rented it for 2020, we've set up all the appropriate documents, triple net lease and so forth, but not set up in 2019. The corporation has been taking depreciation on the cottages built after the corporation started. The corporation doesn't own it. The taxpayer owns it, not the corporation, right? The corporation cannot take depreciation. They can take lease expenses. The owner takes depreciation on the Schedule C. I would fix it in the corporation. The corporation cannot take depreciation on something they don't own. Since the lease was not set up in 2019, what do? They still can't take depreciation because they never owned it. They can still pay rent even if they don't have a formal lease contract. And I would have set up the lease documents with an attorney memorializing the arrangement when they started renting it. So I would have set up the lease contracts using an attorney, not to backdate it. I would memorialize it. Would I reclassify some of the distribution as rent? I don't know. You would need to look at each of the transactions and see the intention of the transactions. If they were paying rent, then pick it up as rent, and you're going to amend the tax returns that are affected. So the individual tax return will pick up rental income on Schedule E. The corporation can have rental expense. They cannot have depreciation. They don't own the asset, and they don't have a lease to buy contract. So if they had a lease to buy contract, that would be different. They were not set up as rent. They didn't realize they couldn't take it on the corporate return. Again, go to the attorney, memorialize the rental agreement for the earlier year. Attorneys have a value, and even though they may not have had anything in writing, there was an intention. We don't backdate documents, but we do memorialize documents with the help of an attorney who knows how to do that. They don't all know how to do that, but don't backdate it. No income because of COVID-19, can't afford an attorney right now. Treat it as rent regardless. Have them put together a written agreement that this was our intention for that year, and hope IRS never asks. Yeah, so go ahead and do that. Keep everything in writing. Anything involving real estate has to be in writing. There is no what I had in my mind concept. So anything involving real estate needs to be in writing. And then you just play the audit roulette game and hope the IRS never audits. Yeah? Okay, Luis said he had a question. So Luis, go ahead and post your question. Meanwhile, I think Anne is trying to answer. A Form 3550, 3115 for the prior depreciation on the 1040. Well, Anne, they took the depreciation on the 1120. On the 1120. Okay. They got to amend the 1120 to remove that. Eva, I was studying in Fast Forward Academy in our group, and while taking a question in the exam on the credit section, it brought up more questions. And so, why is the Roth IRA not excluded from the savers credit? I'm not clear on the question, but any money that is paid into a retirement account, whether the amount that's contributed is deductible or not, makes the taxpayer entitled to receive a savers credit, a retirement savers credit. The purpose of the credit was to encourage people who didn't have very high income to save money. And so whether it comes out of the paycheck, whether it's going into a Roth, whether it's going into a regular IRA, all of that qualifies for the retirement savers credit. But the neat thing about the retirement savers credit is anybody whose income is low enough to qualify for that credit can't use it because their taxes are too low to get a refundable credit. Just as a political aside, it's most people I know who've tried to use that for their clients get little or no value. But yes, it is taken into account. But it's still allowable on the 1040. Okay, that's a good point. So the depreciation on that rental property should be on the 1040 on a Schedule E, and they should be picking up the rental income. Okay, Luis, that helps. All right. Anyone else have questions? I think we've covered everybody except Camille, and hopefully she'll post that in the board. Good point, Anne. Yeah, real people create real issues that we would not anticipate. They absolutely have things we would never have thought of. By the way, I don't know if you're familiar with Tax Buzz, the taxbuzz.com, if you want to promote your tax practice, that may be an interesting place to sign up so that you can get clients, because they will help you build your practice. Every month they have a Twitter chat, a Tax Buzz Twitter chat, and Lauren, who actually is traveling around the world, currently she is stuck in Windsor in the UK, near Windsor Castle, puts together these questions, 10 or 12 questions every month, and a variety of tax professionals, fairly prominent tax professionals, participate in answering the questions. You are very welcome to participate, answer questions, read the information. Last month, this month, a May's Tax Buzz chat is over here, so you can read some of that stuff and see the perspective from a lot of different professionals about how we are dealing with the economic recovery. Everyone has different size practices. Debbie, a question for a friend. Is there any way to get an electronic federal ID number while all is shut down? I have no idea because e-services is shut down. The Taxpayer Advocate Service is not designed to help. What you can do is get in touch with your stakeholder liaison, have your friend contact the local stakeholder liaison, and they may be able to help her. Okay? That is always one excellent way to get to the back end of the IRS is have someone at Stakeholder Liaison help us. Marty, another question. A client just converted a detached garage into a one-bedroom apartment on an existing rental. The original house includes the breakdown on the land and improvements. For the new rental unit added, how do I break down land and improvements? Well, it's still part of the same land, so that's not an issue. The cost of the conversion is what you would pick up as what you are depreciating for that rental unit. Leave everything alone on the other one. That's the best way to make it really simple. Okay, Marley? Because you're already depreciating it, you don't want to split it up. Just leave it alone. The cost of the conversion is the basis, yes. And the land you don't depreciate anyway. But make sure on depreciation schedules there should be a line for land or salvage value. Fill that in so you know how much it is when they sell the property and you don't forget to include the land value as part of the basis. You're very welcome. Okay, guys, anyone have anything else as a last minute thing? I'm going to post the handouts in the board. I will post the handouts at the Tax Mama site. I will not post the chat on the Tax Mama site, but it will be in the board. Anybody who is here who is not a member of the Tax Mama class and wants the chat, I can email that to you privately. Okay? All right. Interesting. Okay, everybody. Have a great day, and I will see many of you on Saturday. And now you see how the microphone thing works. The audio will get posted in a couple of days, but the video will be up today in all places. Thanks for your feedback, Anne. I appreciate it. Guys in Mexico, thanks for your feedback. And everybody who sent questions so I could do the homework and prepare. Makes it all worthwhile.